Hello.
Hello.
You're listening to CIDR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. I'm Hannah, and I'm joined in studio with...
Violet.
Violet is my esteemed and lovely student exec. Do you want to introduce yourself and what you do first?
Yeah, sure. My name is Violet. My pronouns are she, her. I am the current spoken word student executive here at CITR. So I work closely with Henna, and we have a grand old time. I'm also a programmer. I do a show every other Tuesday called Therapy Hour at 6 p.m. We just did our show last night, special fun drive episode. And we did a live show, which usually we do pre-recorded. And I was just explaining to Henna off air how it was very stressful, but also very fun.
Yeah, big relate.
Yeah.
Violet and I were just talking about how live radio is just a whole different beast. But it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. It's thrilling. That's how I would describe it.
It really is. I felt the adrenaline, mm-hmm. you know.
Right? Yeah, so I will talk a little bit about myself as well. Violet and I work together in the spoken word department, as Violet mentioned. I'm the spoken word coordinator. I oversee various radio collectives, such as news, arts, music, sports, and then identity-based collectives, such as gender empowerment, people of color, and accessibility. So it's really nice and sweet because I get to see passionate community members come together to make alternative content and highlight underrepresented voices and things you don't often see in mainstream media. And the other part of my job is designing and hosting training. So the big training I host at CADR is the media ethics training, and I'm a big ethics nerd. So that's pretty sick.
That's a very good nerd to be, I have to say.
Yeah, at the end of every training, I'm like, if you want to talk about objectivity, find me after this training.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I took Henna's media ethics training and absolutely loved it. And that was something new that you brought to CITR, right? Because I don't remember it being there before. And I think that it's very valuable. And I think it adds a lot. And I think your experience with J-School adds a lot to that as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So before we move on, we should talk about Fun Drive.
Woohoo!
This is a special and exclusive Fun Drive fill-in. And for folks who don't know, Fun Drive is CADR and Discorder's week-long fundraising event. Our goal this year is to raise $20,000.
Yeah, I actually don't know their goal, but yeah, that's great.
It's the time of the year where we reach out to our listeners and ask them to support us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really kind of rely on our little fun drive time of year. And I think every year that I've been involved, I've really been blown away by the generosity of our listeners and our contributors and friends and family. And it really means a lot to us. I know CITR has been so impactful for me in my time at UBC. In some ways, it's like kind of changed my life. I feel like I want to go on and like do radio for the rest of my life, and I don't know if I would have discovered that without CITR. So I love what we do here.
Oh, I'm just gonna say again. Yeah, you know what, Violet? I totally hear you because I want to do radio for the rest of my life. It's like, of all the mediums, and hey, I try to consume content across all mediums because I don't know, that's what I do. But like, there's something very intimate about radio,
100%,
that I just don't think you get anywhere else. And it's just something very special, the bond. I mean, I don't really know who's listening to my show, but I feel like I'm talking to someone and I'm like, oh, yeah, thank you for listening, or like, dear listeners, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So just that bond I cherish.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, because CITR is like a quite close-knit community and relatively small, I feel like I have so much room and freedom to experiment and be creative and like be a pioneer for my own projects, as well as collaborate with so many other people. And it's the biggest community, I think, in my life, where I enter into a space with this common love of like arts, culture, and radio. And then that's what we all share, but then we all bring such unique perspectives to it. And that's something that I've just really loved about being involved with CITR.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I love about CITR is that it's not competitive and we're not fighting for a seat at the table, but every person brings something different.
Yeah.
Like, we have a lot of volunteers in the spoken word department, and every person brings something different, something unique. And that's just so cool, and it's so collaborative. And it's just a community aspect, which I really appreciated so much more in the pandemic, of like, yeah, these are people with like similar interests and shared love for radio, but also more importantly, community,
mm-hmm.
and sharing similar values. And I go back to think that I don't think I would have started my radio show. And yeah, I do also do a radio show here called This Is Not Fine, which is, I don't even know how to explain it. Every time my definition changes, mm. but I'll try. I think, okay, I'll say it's a commentary on cultural phenomenons and what is not fine. Mm. And I like to call it Rage Radio. Healthy dose of rage. And if it wasn't for Jasper and Dora, my lovely, amazing colleagues, being like, no, you got to do it. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel so supported here. It's ridiculous. Like, people are like, you can do it. You should do it, you know, and we'll be here. We're going to back you up. We'll help you out, anything you need. And that really just like gives my little timid self so much like confidence. I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe I can do it.
Me? Are you sure? Nah.
Are you guys serious? Little old me.
Okay, if you insist. Yeah. Only for you.
Right, exactly. It's so nice. It's so empowering. I love it.
Yeah, and what's so cool is that there are folks with different expertise, and you can really go and they can deliver your vision. Like, I was telling someone in one of the meetings yesterday, we all rely so much on Ricky, who's our art director, to deliver visuals, and he really does. And every time I'm like, oh, this is so cool. It's better than I imagined.
Yeah.
Right? Or Jasper, who's our programming head, who's really running the whole show, or Dora, who does music and volunteer. I run the spoken word department. And it's just, I don't know. There's something very unique about that concept.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and we have to thank our lovely donors for making it possible, and I hope you all hearing us talk about why we love CITR makes you consider donating, because it really wouldn't be possible without the generosity of our listeners. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate you and we love you.
Yeah, I second that. And to donate, simply go to citr.ca/donate. Now, without further ado, we should talk about why we're here today and what's the theme of our show.
Yeah, yeah. So Hen and I have talked about our love-hate relationship with rom-coms in general. In some ways we enjoy them, in some ways it makes us want to rip our hair out. So we were kind of meditating on that idea, and we kind of landed on one of the more iconic, I would say, rom-coms of the past several years, which is 500 Days of Summer. And I know you just rewatched it recently, so maybe you'd be best to give a synopsis of 500 Days of Summer.
Ooh, okay.
I can chime in as well if
sure.
you need.
I'm so bad at summarizing things. I'm like, I'm going to tell you every scene.
Right.
So you feel like you were there.
Yeah.
And that sometimes is not helpful because people don't have 2 hours to right. listen to the entire story. But yeah, so I rewatched 500 Days of Summer yesterday after 8 years. And yeah, what a throwback. I will say it hit very differently. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I went in expecting, really. I just remembered watching this film when it came out, and it was it was groundbreaking in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I remember just like, I really enjoyed it. I was, I don't know, really young. Now I was just, I don't know. It was different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, it has been, it was released in 2009. Mm-hmm. So quite a bit of time has passed. So yeah. And also, if you watch it when it was first released, you might have been in a very different stage in your life. You might have had different opinions on the world. And it is interesting to absorb media at one time and then go back another time and, you know, watch a movie again and be like, this is not the same as the first time I watched
this. Oh, yeah. Right? It's interesting because it goes both ways. Sometimes it's like, oh, no, this is exactly what I imagined. I love it. This is like cozy and warm and nostalgic. So with the film, what happens is we see the film through Tom's point of view, who's our protagonist. He works at a greeting card company where he writes the greeting card messages, and he meets Summer there, who's the assistant of the boss, and he falls in love with her, and the entire film is 500 Days of Summer. So Summer is again our female protagonist, and we see him recalling his relationship with Summer, which lasted for 500 days, and as you can imagine, it didn't work out at the end, and so that's why he's in retrospect he's thinking of the relationship and like what went right and what went wrong. We see the film go like back and forth throughout their time, and so it's not in a chronological order, which is actually kind of really cool that it doesn't follow a linear arc.
Yeah, and I don't think any other rom-coms at that time were really being experimental with their chronology at that time. So to the film's credit, I think that was something interesting, at least, that they were trying to do. And I know that artistic choice was kind of based on trying to reflect how our memory actually functions for us. And when we do look back on a relationship, it's not like playing out as a typical rom-com movie would. It's more sporadic, it's more mixed up and jumbled, and you remember these good memories, and then all of a sudden it's like these bad memories from the end of the relationship and like bouncing back and forth. So I thought that was kind of interesting for the film to structure itself that way.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. It does really play into our memory in real life, where when is it even ever chronological, right? And some moments really stick with you, but then you're like, oh no, actually this person really hurt me, and then you're gonna remember that and get mad. So that is the film in a nutshell. Wallet and I were talking about this yesterday, and it turns out we have some similar thoughts but also different takes on the film. So that is very interesting.
Yeah, that's what we kind of wanted to unpack on air for you all listening. And I'm interested to see how this conversation goes, because we fleshed a few things out when we met about this yesterday. And honestly, I thought that we would have more similar views on the film than when we started talking about it. I think we actually had quite different views on the film, and I think that in and of itself is very interesting and reflective of what this film was and what this film was doing. I don't think it's a film that everyone comes out of feeling the same way. I think it's quite nuanced, and I think that the characters are like deeply flawed, and then the person watching the film might want to side with one character or the other. And I don't think anything is more or less valid. And for me, it was really enjoyable, because when I had first watched the film, I had heard a few things about what the film was trying to do. This was a few years ago, not quite when it had come out, but a little bit after. And then kind of had formulated some thoughts on the film from there. And then having this radio show coming up, I did a lot more research into the film. And that, to me, kind of muddied the waters a little bit more than I was expecting. I thought it would really drive home my preconceptions of what the film already was when I had first watched it, but it actually made me a bit more confused about what they were trying to do there.
Yeah, one thing that I will agree here is the confusion part, because that's exactly what I felt. And for me, I watched the film, and by the end, a lot of critique that I had read and heard, yes, I could see that play out. But then at the end, I was, yes, confused, but also I was feeling underwhelmed. And maybe the reason is because this film has been talked about so much that there was nothing new that I could take away from the film. And yeah, like one of the big critiques of the film is the manic pixie dream girl trope we see play out in Zooey Deschanel's character, which is funny because I would say Zooey Deschanel is the epitome of the manic pixie dream girl.
She's a blueprint.
Yeah, so we know that, we've heard that. But I will say, though, upon rewatching, I could see and appreciate that they did try to subvert the trope of the manic pixie dream girl. But then again, my big frustration was that it did reinforce that stereotype in some places, like especially in the end. I was left thinking that, okay, so that didn't work out. Which it was subverting the norm, because usually it always works out with the manic pixie dream girl, right?
Right.
But at the end, I thought...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
If you're listening, these are all big spoilers.
Thank you. Yeah. We will put a disclaimer on the website.
Yeah.
But towards the end, it's like, did Tom learn anything? Is he going to move on to another person and project? And just really romanticize this person, and it might work out. Yeah. So that's how I was left feeling.
Well, in my view of the film, I think that the casting of Zooey Deschanel in that character was perfect, because I think that that character needed to embody the qualities of a manic pixie dream girl, because I think in the protagonist's view, Tom, she was that. But I also read the film, though, as Summer's character wasn't inherently a manic pixie dream girl. I think that maybe she had some of those qualities, but I think that Tom was ignoring a more rich inner life that character actually had, therefore turning her into a manic pixie dream girl. And obviously we see the narrative play out from Tom's perspective. So again, yes, she becomes the manic pixie dream girl, but I think in a lot of ways that choice to make that character behave in that way and cast someone so readily able to embody this manic pixie dream girl character like Zooey Deschanel was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek choice by the film to consciously be like presenting this character trope and kind of like poking at you of like, are you going to view her this way, or can you see that her character is presented this way through our protagonist's perspective? And maybe that doesn't click until the end, where they subvert it, where the guy doesn't get the girl. Like, he doesn't get to end up with Zooey Deschanel's character. He doesn't end up with Summer like you typically would. Because unlike a manic pixie dream girl, she kind of has this agency, and she's not all over Tom and instantly like, yes, you are the one, and like, you are this quiet, nerdy guy, and I'm gonna like make your life fun and exciting because that's just who I am, and I live to please you, basically.
And serve you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that, you know, when you were talking, it reminded me of that really famous sequence from the film, The Expectation versus Reality, which was so powerful because I feel like if the film did anything right, it was that scene where it was really bringing home the point of like, hey, this is your expectation, where you're romanticizing the person and it's not really about who they are but who they are to you, but then this is the reality.
Yeah.
And yeah, that scene definitely was quite heartfelt, but also, like, it really got in the punch of, like, oh, God, yeah, this is not. And, like, it was also very human, right? Because we all have romanticized a person that we were really into, but then it doesn't work out. And the takeaway is that you don't have to change your mind, and it's okay to be sad and upset, but also remembering that the other person is human and you gotta respect that.
And I think it's interesting that the film did that and showed us these kind of parallel images of Tom's expectation versus what the reality was at that dinner party. And I think what was kind of happening there, because they could have just shown what happened at the dinner party and how Summer wasn't really all over Tom and the way that he would have wanted, and I think we still would have understood that that would have been disappointing for Tom and that he would have wanted something else. But I think by actually giving us the image of what his expectations were and showing us that fantasy visually on screen kind of insinuates that for Tom, that fantasy is almost still real. Like, it almost did happen, because I think Tom is someone who just lives so much in his fantasy about love and about the world and about this girl, Summer, that that fantasy is almost as real as the reality for him. And I think if, you know, partway through the dinner, she had pulled him aside to, like, have this private romantic moment, it's like all the, like, fantasy that had come before that would have been real for Tom. And, like, the disappointment that was the reality would have just washed away very easily. That's how I kind of interpreted that.
No, I agree about that. But you know what's interesting is, and especially what we talked about at the beginning of the segment, is that the film did turn out to be very divisive. Divisive?
Yeah.
Yes.
like people felt different ways about it.
I was like, wait. I guess people say divisive or divisive. But anyway, so point being that there were a lot of audience that have strong feelings about Zoe, who did Tom wrong, or Summer's character, who did Tom wrong and should have apologized and was brutal and ruthless. And that was interesting, because again, that was not the film's intention. And I know a whole generation of young men who really idolized Tom's character. And that's funny to me, right? Because again, I'm like, oh yeah, so in some ways people saw what they wanted to see. And maybe I think again at the ending, spoiler alert again, where people are like, okay, Summer didn't do, someone else will do, it's fine. And so there is still hope, and he can go on living. Like, the Tom's character is just very delusional. So it's this, again, this idea that often cis men don't feel like they need to work on themselves and go on that individual journey, which women, again, for decades and decades and centuries are always encouraged to, like, work on yourself before you put yourself out there. But men, no, it's like, yeah, you're going to find the one who's going to put in all the work and make you a better person.
Yeah, it's super true. And I think what's interesting is I've seen a few interviews and read a few articles about specifically the director and also the cast of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel, and then the director, Mark Webb, talking about how Tom's character is intended to be the villain, as he, and he's intended to kind of subvert your expectations of, like, just because he's quote-unquote a nice guy doesn't mean he's actually doing everything right, doesn't mean he deserves to end up with Summer in the end. But then when I was doing more research for this, I found out that the screenwriter, so the person who had written the actual film, had based it on his own relationship where he didn't end up with the girl. She went and got engaged after their relationship. And I was looking at the film and I noticed the author's note in the beginning that kind of was, like, cheekily, like, The following work is a work of fiction. Any resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental, especially you, Jenny Beckman. And then he calls her the B word. And to me, I was like, now I understand a bit more why people get different things out of this, because while maybe the cast and the directors were kind of on the same page of like, this is making fun of Tom and how Tom is behaving and how he thinks he is owed something from Summer without actually communicating well to her or really, you know, showing up as a good partner. Like, we see so many scenes where he's not actually listening to her. He's already made up his mind about who this person is, but he's not actually interested in getting to know the inner workings of this character. But while that may be true on that end of things, the actual screenwriter seemed to, like, he was Tom's character. Like, that's the perspective he was writing this from.
Exactly.
And so that's why it made more sense to me then of why people can come out of it with more of a, like, siding on Tom side of thing perspective. And so that's interesting that they had these mishmash of kind of opinions going into the film as, you know, collaborative creators. But it was also frustrating to me because I was like, why would Tom, like, in a way, okay, it makes sense that, like, Tom's character is writing this, but also, like, I want to believe that Tom was wrong from the perspective watching the film. So, yeah.
That's what I mean. Exactly. It was contradictory in some fundamental ways, right? Which left folks feeling very confused. And it was just so easy to side with the protagonist, the male protagonist. And yeah, we all want someone to root for.
Mm-hmm.
Summer, we don't even know her. We don't feel attached to her. I felt very detached to the character. I was like, I don't know her. And then she disappeared at the end. And it's like, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Someone else would do. But Tom, we obviously, the film is played out through his perspective. But like Violet was saying, he doesn't really make any effort to get to know her or to show her for who she was, except for her physical qualities. Like, yes, she's a beautiful, conventionally attractive woman, but other than that, we really don't know anything about her, what her dreams are, what her aspirations are. Whereas Summer takes interest in his life, asks him, and then we find out he's stuck in a dead-end job, which we wouldn't find until Summer had really taken interest in mm-hmm. his life, right? And yeah, so it's just so interesting because I know so many indie mopey boys
mm-hmm.
growing up who loved this film and who felt seen in Tom's character. And so, yeah, I will say, though, like, yeah, this film has definitely fostered discourse, and you can come out of the film and just have a complete different opinion. Because, like, I was also curious that Violet and I had such different takes, because usually we are really on the same page
yeah,
about things.
It's true.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that this film is doing things, in my opinion, to critique rom-com tropes in general. And I think we'll get a little bit more into that a little bit later in our fill-in episode.
Yeah. Should we take a break?
Yeah.
Okay, so I am going to play some FunDrive promos, and then we're going to play some music.
Hey, it's me. Are you still on for Saturday?
We get it. It's hard being new in Vancouver. Between big city loneliness and emotionally unavailable people, it's hard to put yourself out there without losing your mind and your dignity. Sometimes the hardest part about online dating is weeding out those sizzling hot ruby red flags. Other times, it feels difficult to get anywhere at all. Community radio will never ghost you, because there are plenty of fish at CITR. Help keep our station running by donating to citr.ca/donate.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
This way about a woman in your past. Funny thing is that you never said I love you back. Half a decade of my life, we still fucking fight. You push every single button, wanna spend the night. Now I see your name calling, I just press decline. Erase the memory, eternal sunshine, spotless mind. Yeah, you pay me back.
Yeah, you pay me bad, yeah, you pay me bad, all I did.
like you just heard No Lover by Horace Pavar. She's a Vancouver-based rapper, and she's super dope. So you should all check her out. And before that, you heard On the Lips by Frankie Cosmos.
Mm-hmm. My go-to falling in love artist, Frankie Cosmos.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're listening to CADR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. I am Hannah, and I'm joined in studio
by Violet.
Yeah, that's correct. And we are doing a fun drive fill-in where we have been talking about the film 500 Days of Summer and also about fun drive in general.
Yeah, it's been fun talking about it. I think that I was a little bit nervous going into it knowing we had kind of disagreements on the film, but I think honestly it adds to more enriching conversation. I'm excited to continue it. And it's fun because I think Fun Drive has given us a very fun excuse to make radio together when we don't always get the opportunity to do so.
Heck yeah.
One more good thing about Fun Drive.
Yeah, putting the fun in Fun Drive.
Oh, nice. I love that.
Yeah. And again, a reminder to folks, you can donate by going to cadr.ca/donate and get some sick swag.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, the prizes are so fun this year.
Do you want to share the prizes with our listeners?
We have got the keychain, which honestly for me, that's like, I know that's one of the least amount of monies
lower
and like
tiers,
lower tiers that you can get. But it's so cool. It's just like, if you go on our website, you can see. But if you donate $30 or $5 a month, you get this really cute little tropical beach bathing keychain that's very cute. And then $60 or $10 a month, you get a very fun graphic t-shirt. And then if you donate 101.9, you know, little hint to our station ID, or $16 a month, you get a really neat mug. Who doesn't need another cool, funky mug in their collection, as well as a Valentine's Day song dedication? And that's just wonderful. I love that we do that every year of dedicating Valentine's Day songs, because I think it's fun. And then if you donate $176 or $20 a month, you get Discorder's Lost Month Special Edition. Very cool. I've had a little peek at it, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. We've got two more prize packs. So we've got, if you donate $500 or $45 a month, you get a Discorder crew neck, which is so sweet. I love the graphic on that one. Again, if you go to citr.ca, you can see all of these prizes for yourself. And finally, if you donate $1,000 or $80 a month, you can host your own show. And you get recognition on our donor wall.
Wow.
Yeah. So many great prizes this year.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely excited. I love how excited you are about the keychain.
I know. It's like literally the lowest tier, but it's so cute. I love it.
Yeah. Can't put a price on that keychain.
It's true.
Thank you, Violet, for that breakdown. And I just want to tell our listeners that CADR is mostly volunteer run, which is just so great. And it really is so unique with how CADR runs, where we provide this opportunity to young folks who want to get involved in media, whether it be making radio, writing for Discorder, and we offer free trainings, and there's just a lot of mentorship that goes on at CADR, and it's low barrier, mm-hmm. it's quite accessible, and your support means a lot to us.
Yeah, it's my favorite place on campus.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah, it's such a gem in Vancouver in general, but especially at UBC. And it means so much to so many people. And I love it here. I'll say it. I'll be the first to say it.
Thank you, Violet, for being vulnerable.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and it's so cool to see folks who've been involved with CADR since the 70s, like radio dads and radio moms. I love it.
Mm-hmm. I know there's so many programmers who have been here for a really long time and like keep at it. It's honestly really inspiring for me as someone who's relatively new to see that CITR is a place and a community that makes people want to stay for decades, you know? Like, that's awesome. That's really special.
Totally, right? It has this longevity and people care. People truly care.
Yeah.
And just seeing some of our donors who are regular donors just, like, melts my heart. It's yeah. Like, thank you.
Yeah, 100%. We used to do phone calls for a fun drive. I don't think we do them anymore.
No.
Yeah. But honestly, that was kind of a fun experience for me because I got to have dialogue with some of the people who support us. And a lot of times they had really sweet, really glowing things to say about what it meant to them. I know there was someone who came in a few years in a row to donate in person, talked about how I think either he drives a lot or he lives out of his van, and he donates every year because he just has the radio station on 24/7. So if you're listening, shout out to you, and we really appreciate you, and we're glad that you appreciate us.
That's such a sweet story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as you can see, Violet and I can go on and on about our love for CADR, but we also are excited to go back to our topic for today. We were talking about 500 Days of Summer earlier, but we want to talk about other rom-coms and how they compare to 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah, yeah. The main one I wanted to focus on was When Harry Met Sally, which I think is a very classic rom-com. And the reason why I associate it so much with 500 Days of Summer is because I originally watched them back to back. I watched 500 Days of Summer first, and then I watched When Harry Met Sally. I was just in a rom-com mood. To be fair, I haven't rewatched When Harry Met Sally in a while. And I was looking up some clips, and I think my initial assessment maybe wasn't as accurate as I had originally thought, but I think that what's different than 500 Days of Summer is in 500 Days of Summer, it kind of subverts gender norms because Tom is kind of pining after this woman and she's a little bit more, you know, flippant about the relationship, whereas in Harry Met Sally, they're very much reinforcing gender norms of men are like very sex crazed and then women are more strategic with like the partners that they pick. So I thought that that was an interesting difference. But something that I thought was similar was the types of communication that was happening, where I think it was reinforcing this thing that often happens in rom-coms where the characters will vocalize something to each other like, hey, I just want to be friends. Like, I'm not interested in you. But then by the end of it, they end up together. And I think that in and of itself has kind of harmful implications about setting out a model of how relationships should go. And it's giving us media that's saying, if someone is saying that they're not interested in you and that they just want to be your friend, if you try a little bit harder, you will get them and they will eventually come around and they'll fall in love with you, even though what they were saying is that they didn't want to do that. And to me, that's very harmful. And I see that in almost every single rom-com. And I could go on about this for a while, but I think that's one thing I appreciated about 500 Days of Summer is that if you catch yourself saying, well, Tom was such a nice guy, like he deserved to be with her, I think that that's some like conditioning that we have from rom-coms in general of if you're persistent, if you do X, Y, and Z, like you deserve her. So that's kind of the rom-com that sticks in my mind in terms of that. But I know you had another rom-com that kind of came to mind for you.
Yeah. No, the film that I was thinking of was He's Just Not That Into You, which is another classic film. It's interesting because I will say the film does have solid advice that still holds true of like, hey, he's not playing hard to get. If he's not into you, he's not into you. If he isn't showing interest, if he isn't caring for you, then most likely he's not interested. And ditch that person. Mm-hmm. You know, find someone who actually cares about you, shows that they're interested, and does nice things for you. As well as another point, and it was the film is very heteronormative, but it's like really like men and women and how they act and how they're conditioned. But it also shows that how a woman's self-worth shouldn't hinge on a dude's approval. Mm. However, again, something that I felt in 500 Days of Summer as well as this film is that it does reinforce some of the stereotypes that it's trying to shatter. Because what happens is that, so we have Justin Long's character who's very who's very savvy, and he's sassy is the word that I could not remember for the life of me.
Oh, okay.
He's very sassy and he's confident and he's charming and women are into him. And so he meets Jennifer Goodwin's character, and Jennifer Goodwin is love struck, hopeless romantic, very much like Tom.
Yeah.
Just wants to be in love.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to give her all this advice of like, hey, that person is not interested. Do not wait for their call. Like, move on, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, right? But then what happens? She falls for him.
Right.
And then he is clearly not interested, did not give her any of the signs. But then at the end, we see that Justin Long realizes, no, actually, I am in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to her apartment, which, you know, we all know how that's a very classic rom-com ending. But what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, like, I get it. We all inherently crave the happy ending of, like, yeah, the folks ended up together. But then it's also problematic because when does that happen in real life?
I mean, sometimes people end up together.
Well, yeah, but like, I mean, the persist... You know what I
no,
mean?
No, I know what you mean.
Like, the persistency is, like... If you have to try so hard, it's really not worth it.
Well, not only is it not worth it, but I think that you're not listening to that person's boundaries. Like, I think what rom-coms are doing a lot of times is telling us not to take no for an answer, not to listen to someone when they say they're not interested because they're being coy or they're going to come around at some point. And honestly, I think that's really harmful. I think it's really dangerous. I think that, like, obviously you can separate fantasy from reality, and movies are giving us a fantasy, and that's fine, but I think that they do have real implications on our life. And I think in heterosexual relationships there can be this dynamic of predator prey where reinforcing like gender norms, a man is to pursue a woman, and she's kind of, and then the woman is kind of to almost like run away from that or be coy or say no or be convinced. And I think rom-coms are not innocent in perpetuating that in a very real way.
For sure. Yeah, well, yeah, what I was trying to say earlier is that you're also doing a disservice to yourself, right? Because then that can lead to a lot of like self-loathing and disappointments. So just really it's important to be level-headed and really see what's going on instead of like what you want to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I totally agree of the predator prey dynamic, because that's what happens when often men don't take women seriously and don't believe when they're saying that they're not interested. And then it's this whole idea that, oh well, and it's almost taken as a challenge of like,
yes,
oh well, I'm gonna change your mind.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, if I have to change someone's mind, that just feels icky mm-hmm. to me.
And it doesn't help that we do kind of approach dating as a game sometimes, of not replying right away and not following our instincts of like what you would actually do if you were interested in someone or what you might instinctively want to do, but you want to play it cool. You don't want to seem too, you know, clingy or too into it too early as kind of a protective measure. But it, again, it reinforces this thing of I'm saying this, but maybe I mean something else. And if you pursue me for long enough and you show that you're interested for long enough, maybe I'll come around and I'll show you that I'm actually interested as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be the first to say that's really messed up and we need to stop doing this. Yeah, that was one of my frustrations with 500 Days of Summer, actually, because, yes, I appreciated that Summer was upfront and said, I'm not looking for a relationship, I just want to be casual, but then all her actions kind of went against it. I felt like, and yeah, I get it, like if the other person is totally in love with you, they'll look at your actions and be like, oh, well, they're going to IKEA with me, they're holding hands, we're holding hands, we're hanging out all the time. And it's interesting because our idea of like role reversal is that, okay, so woman is not going to be love struck and hopeless romantic, but we're going to make the woman like a man. And I think and be all cold and distant and not interested, which actually one of Tom's friends actually says that to Zooey Deschanel when she's like, oh, I just want to be casual, I don't want to date anyone. And then he's like, oh, are you a dude? And so, and then it also like feeds into the whole like cool girl trope of like one of the dudes don't care, too cool, doesn't have emotions. And so what would I like to see, nobody asked, but I'm just gonna say it, is that Both parties be sensitive and respectful of each other's emotions and really take responsibility for your words, but also for your actions.
Yeah, and I think it makes me think a lot about the conversations that we have with people that we're involved with physically or romantically, and really giving yourselves an opportunity to flesh out what your boundaries are going to be. And to some extent, like, do be taking people at their word. And so in 500 Days of Summer, Summer's character says, hey, I don't want anything serious, I just want something casual. I can understand how maybe some of her actions after that maybe reflect something differently. But I do think that that was maybe, because first of all, Tom had been like, that's totally fine when Zooey Deschanel's character said that, when we know, coming like seeing his inner thoughts, we know that it's not okay. We know that's not what he's looking for. We know he's not willing to settle for that. So first of all, that needed to be something that he communicated. On Summer's end, all she knows is that he's like, yeah, that's cool. So moving forward, she's like, okay, well, great. And then the other thing that we kind of discussed in our meeting yesterday about this is I think that sometimes having relationships just be based on physicality or just being more casual in modern day has kind of now translated to you're disrespectful, you're not having these open conversations, you're not being sweet or having fun with that person necessarily, going out and doing things together. And I think that that's between the two people. They need to like communicate what they both want, what they're comfortable with, what they're not comfortable with, and probably have continuous check-ins on that of how everyone's feeling. You know, obviously in real life, we're not talking rom-coms here. Maybe that would be like bogging it down. I don't know. I'd love to see a rom-com like that personally.
I want to see a rom-com just about check-ins.
Right?
But what I want to add to that is that that's exactly the inherent problem, right? Because we feel like we don't owe each other anything, but we really do. If you're involved with a person in any capacity, and if you've met them IRL even once, you owe them just basic decency. Like, don't be a terrible human being.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's something Violet and I strongly feel about. Ghosting is bad. Ghosting is rude. Don't do it.
Agreed. 100%. Yeah, we've had extensive conversations about ghosting. But I want to bring up this one point that I found from this book called The Anatomy of Story by John Truby, where he describes how romance movies naturally cast one character as the hero and the other character that they desire as the opponent. So even when these two characters are falling in love, they actually act as antagonists, which I think is super interesting within this conversation. And while we usually see the motivations behind each of the characters' actions, we usually tend to side with the character who's fighting for or pursuing the relationship, which I think in a lot of ways is very valid because we're signing up for a romance movie. So we're trying to fight for these two people to be together. Like, that's what we want. But also, I think, again, when we talk about the implications that come out of what we're watching, it's okay to not want a relationship. It's okay to start seeing someone and change your mind. And I think that that's not really portrayed in these romantic movies and these rom-coms especially.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because it makes me think of how it's really one against the other. Like, one does the pursuing and one is pursued. But why we miss out on that duality of like, oh, these both, two of these people are both into each other and are pursuing each other in their own ways and are trying to like communicate. But it's again, it goes back to like the game dynamic or like the challenge dynamic of like setting two people, which is so strange. It's like they both want to, like, not they both, but one person desires the other person, but it's like they're set up against each other, you know? And then you're felt like, oh, you're rooting for that one person, but the other person is automatically becomes the villain.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I don't think it sets up a very good portrayal of how a relationship and especially love should really be. Like, it should be mutual. It should be consensual. No. You guys should not be enemies.
No.
You should be friends and you should be partners.
Yeah.
Like, it's not very okay, in my opinion.
No, just talk.
And I had never thought about it in these terms of, like, these characters start as antagonists. Like, they just do. And so, me coming from like a film studies perspective, like, that's just very interesting for me to conceptualize these movies in that way.
If I had a dollar for every film that I've seen where the two protagonists hate each other at the beginning, and I will say, never happened to me, someone I hate and then I fall in love with them.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's never happened in my life either.
No, it would be really whack if that happened.
Are you one of those people that's like, oh, when this guy's like not interested in me at all, like, I want him so much more? Have you seen that like kind of cliche?
Oh yeah. That's what he's just not that into you tries to grapple with.
No,
we're not doing that anymore.
No. Cut that part of your life out. Yeah, I never, not that I didn't understand it, I get that it's kind of human nature to want what you can't have, but I am very attracted to when my partners are obsessed with me. They want to spend all their time with me, and they are, like, not instantly in love with me, because that sounds really unhealthy. But, like, for me, it's, like, such the opposite of, like, if you show that you're super interested in me, then I'm like, heck yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
And that's healthy.
Well, yeah, I think so.
You know?
Healthier than the alternative, maybe. Yeah.
The bar is low.
Right? So low.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Violet, for such a riveting discussion.
Yeah, this is super fun.
This does bring us to the end of our fill-in.
Goodness, time flies when you're having fun.
Oh, yeah, it really does. So I just want to remind folks again, it's Fun Drive Week at CIDR, and please go to cidr.ca/donate, and you can get some cool merch.
Yeah, there's lots of fun prizes. We really hope you consider donating. We'd really appreciate it. And thanks so much, everyone, for giving us a little listen.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey, what's wrong?
I just got dumped.
Aw, don't worry. There are plenty other fish in the sea. Plus, do you know who's single? CITR, and they're looking for love this fun drive season.
Really? Is that the radio station that airs Therapy Hour every other Tuesday at 6 p.m.?
Yeah, it is. Therapy Hour is looking for at least 5 donations from listeners this Valentine's Day. So if you wanted to be flirty, you could donate in their name.
But I'm really shy. I don't know if they'll like me.
Don't be shy. Plus, you gotta act quickly because Fun Drive is only taking place from the 3rd to the 11th of February.
Oh, okay. How do I donate?
Visit citr.ca/donate.
Okay. I'm grabbing my wallet now.
That's hot.